Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Friday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. LeBron James loses steam late as the Lakers drop a double overtime game to Dallas. That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. It's always free. It's never behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to watch the show and participate with a great community of 10,000 plus subscribers, many of whom reacted to our show for Thursday about Russell Westbrook, where we asked the question, is he playing? Has he played good, bad, or both for the Lakers this year? So a lot of really great response to that show. We'll talk a little bit maybe about that today, because Westbrook in Thursday night's loss to the Mavs really did have one of his, I think, better games before, like LeBron James, Andy, running out of gas down the stretch. And I thought, you know, the Lakers obviously had a horrendous first quarter. And then after that, you know, they spent the entire rest of the game chipping away, had a chance to win it in the end. And ultimately they lose 119-115 in double OT to Dallas. And it's just one of these games that, to me at least, you're not angry, but man, it's disappointing.
Yeah, I tweeted out at Cam Brothers after the game. It'll get forgotten in an epic game that hit double overtime, but the Lakers won every quarter in regulation other than the first quarter where they finished down 14. Had they not spent as much early energy digging out of a hole, they might have won the whole thing in 48 minutes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on one hand, credit the team for really fighting hard and playing better as the game went along, like particularly defensively. You know, like Luka Doncic had an incredible game. He had 35 points, 14 rebounds, 13 assists. He was absolutely just controlling this game like a conductor with an orchestra. But I will say,
as opposed to the kind with trains, just so yes, people are aware.
Well, look, you got to do that one well too, or otherwise.
No, but it's a different kind of conducting.
Sure, but it is important to exercise control in either of those scenarios. But like, Luka had to make some very difficult shots and some very difficult passes, which, to his credit, he did, because he is one of the best players in the league, and yeah, tonight made a hell of a case for his MVP dossier.
Well, I
dossier.
Either. What would the train conductor say about that?
Dossier.
You would say choo choo. That's funny. I texted you actually during the game. I was like, Luka may not be the MVP this year, but he's definitely the NP, the most necessary player, because good Lord, Dallas can't do anything without him. If you think the Lakers are dependent on LeBron or Anthony Davis, oh my God. The Mavericks are dependent.
It's like
on
some of those seasons Chris Paul had early on in New Orleans, where like when he didn't play, like they might as well have just conceded.
It was like they ran around like it was like the Benny Hill theme.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, nobody knew what to do. But I mean, look, the Lakers held Luka scoreless. Although I will say this, the final 17 minutes of the game, he went 17 minutes without scoring until the game tying three pointer that sent it into overtime. We'll talk about that in a second. Much controversy about the final moments of regulation, including Darvin Ham owning up to what he called a coaching mistake on that Luka three. But the officiating in Thursday's game was, I think it might have been the worst I've ever seen, and we've watched a tremendous amount of NBA basketball.
It was absolutely wretched.
Yeah, it was
like awful. Just, and I mean, we're talking missed calls. We're talking, frankly, made up calls. Like, yeah, we're talking calls that you're like, what in the ever living F are you watching?
And I thought, to be fair, for both teams. I mean, both teams, everybody on both teams was permanently the Y in the YMCA dance. Like everybody was just spent their whole game with their arms up.
Oh, and, I mean, you saw on, you know, NBA Twitter, Lakers Twitter, you know, Mavericks Twitter, just both fan bases pissed off this entire game. Like it got so bad. Stan Van Gundy was commenting on just how this was, frankly, it was a clown show.
There's no way around it. And I will say the one advantage, and I think the terrible officiating, it was equally bad for both teams. And I think it did end up favoring the Lakers because one of the impacts of it was Luka was taking so much physical abuse. I think he just got tired. He didn't move nearly as well over the last 12. That combined with the fact that Jason Kidd didn't take him off the floor. I think the Lakers.
You know, yeah, the flip side. Look, I don't want to get into a rabbit hole on this because
no, reason I mention it even was just to I think to comment a little bit about one of the reasons I think Luka didn't score over the last 17 minutes of the game.
Sure, I was just going to say the flip side of it is there were so many missed calls against LeBron around the rim that if just half of those get called, like some of the physicality against Luka wasn't in the act of shooting or wasn't around the rim or anything like that, just would have been a foul. With LeBron, there were a lot of times he should have just been at the line. So
yeah, and you know that's the other thing. You know, you talk about, you know, if the Lakers had been able to do stuff a little better, they could have won this game in regulation. To their credit, they fight back and they push it to overtime. They push it to double overtime. This is a game they shot 10 of 41 from 3-point range. LeBron was 0 of 7. Schroeder was 0 of 6. Bryant was. The Lakers had 1 3-pointer from their starting lineup, and it came from Max Christie of all people. I say that mostly because he was in the starting lineup, which is only for the second time in his career.
Had a nice
and
game.
He did. And we'll talk about it a little bit. Like they only hit 17 of 27 free throws. Like the Lakers left a ton of points on the board. Dallas only 9 of 17 from the free throw line too. I think again, both teams were being beaten up so badly they couldn't even make their free throws. It was like this reminded me why I didn't like watching the NBA in the 90s. It was just like everything is a wrestling match. It was horrible.
But I mean, you cannot miss 31 threes and 10 free throws and expect to win a game. And case in point, the Lakers did a lot in this game well. You know, they won the rebounding battle without Anthony Davis. They only turned the ball over 9 times in a double overtime game. Like, those are really, really high-end thing. I mean, you know, they shot 39% from the field, but a lot of that is just the threes. You know, like, there is a lot that they did. You know, they won the second through fourth quarters. You can't do that without doing some things executed well, but just you can't miss that many free throws and threes against a bad team, much less a solid team like Dallas.
Well, I will say this. If you just show me some of the shooting and you say LeBron went 9 for 28 in this game, Dennis Schroeder went 3 of 13. Russell Westbrook was 10 of 23. Like, that's a lot of Russ played well, but that's, you know, efficiency, just from a number standpoint. Like, you tell me that, you tell me the 3-point shooting, you tell me the free throw shooting, there's no way I think this game is a double overtime loss.
There's only one player who took double digit field goal attempts and was 50%. That was Thomas Bryant, 5 of 10. Everybody else who took double digit attempts was under 50%. So collectively, that is a lot of misses.
All right. So the good news and the bad news here, we'll get to it here in a second because the Lakers, where they are right now, does feel a little bit different just based on the Western Conference standings. But, oh, why is this one disappointing? We'll talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by LinkedIn. As a small business owner or hiring manager, success in 2023 all depends on your team members. And that's why you got to check out LinkedIn Jobs. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can hire qualified candidates more efficiently by using their targeting tools to match open roles with people who have the skills, values, and experience to help achieve your goals. LinkedIn goes beyond resume data by using insights from your job post, your company, and their 875 million member profiles to land the most qualified candidates. And LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to screen and rate applicants all on one platform. And that's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. And you want to set a tone for 2023 fiscal success right now from the jump. And that makes this a critical time. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find qualified candidates that you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonmba. That's linkedin.com/lockedonmba to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
The Lakers they couldn't score in the overtime. I mean, clearly, Andy were gassed. LeBron was, I want to say, 0-4-8 in the overtime, and 9-21 after four quarters, finished 9-29. Or was it 9-28?
He was 0-6 in overtime.
Okay. So I'm not good at math. He didn't hit a shot in the overtime.
No, the Lakers were 5-17 as a team in overtime. And that was brought up dramatically by Wenyen Gabriel going 3-3. Wenyen, by the way, side note, terrific game. He was really good.
And, you know, part of the problem here was that was the moment, I think, more than anything, where you really understood like how shorthanded the Lakers were. It was easy to kind of forget over the course of the game because, you know, they got a little contributions from Kendrick Nunn and Max Christie stepped up and played well and all that stuff. But you know, I was texting a friend of ours during the overtime. It's like, God, I wish they could sub. But there wasn't even anyone really to put in. It wasn't just the coach's thing where they don't like substituting players in overtime, and every coach in the league does it. There really wasn't anyone for the Lakers to put in this game that made sense. And, you know, that was a shame. And, you know, that to me is one of the sort of the disappointments of this game. If you're going to invest 47 minutes basically of LeBron in a game, you want to win.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a game I don't want to say should have won, because Dallas had plenty of things that they could have done to win this game in regulation too, but it's very much obviously a game that they could have won. And just again, where they are in the standings, where they are in the season, every one of these could have games, and especially the should have games that gets away, it's just even on a night like Thursday, Andy, where they didn't really do anything wrong given the circumstances overall, it wasn't a bad effort, but man, it's just a missed opportunity and they can't afford to miss them.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, the effort was there. I mean, they like mentioned, they were down big to start the game, and they really had to fight just to give themselves that opportunity to potentially win in regulation, much less either of the overtimes. You know, if they managed to shoot, say, 27% from three, which is wretched, they win this game. If they shoot 19 of 27 from, or, you know, they shoot 21 of 27, 22 of 27, something like that from the line, which is, you know, not great, they win. Some combination of both, they win. And it does get difficult down the stretch when, like you said, it's hard for Darvin to make many adjustments because some of the guys that you might put in and out might make adjustments with, Austin Reeves, Lonnie Walker, Patrick Beverley, they're all out. Thomas Bryant played well in this game, but especially down the stretch, there was not a natural matchup for him. The way Dallas was playing smaller with Christian Wood out there, and Wenyen Gabriel is both a better matchup for Wood and was playing well.
Right. He's the only guy who didn't look tired. Right. So you're not taking him out of the game.
No. And yeah, I'm just throwing out potential.
Sure.
Candidates.
No, I understand.
And then
there,
you know, JTA, Kendrick Nunn, neither one of them really distinguished themselves in a way that you would want them out there in overtime. And Max Christie played well, but that's a tough situation to put him in. And frankly, I thought in terms of executing, especially defensively, I thought the closing group that Darvin ran with for, you know, the end of the fourth quarter and basically both overtimes, LeBron, Russ, Schroeder, Gabriel and Brown. I actually thought they played really well together.
Sure. I mean, the Lakers gave up 19 points in the fourth quarter, you know, but again, they only scored 25. Like, they are a bad closing group. And, you know, I understand they were down by six going to the fourth quarter. If you can push you use up that lead and you go into the overtime, that's a win in a lot. Like, that's good. But when you close a game allowing the other team to score 19 points in the fourth quarter, and you enter that quarter only down by six, you should win the game in regulation because you should be able to score more than 25 points in the quarter. The Lakers just, you know, and in the overtime, the difference between Dallas's offense and the Mavs missed a lot of shots in the overtime, and the Lakers' offense was stark. Even though the score wasn't necessarily that way, there was a lot of like open three for Dallas, kind of cringe, hope it doesn't go in. And the Lakers just, it was sort of ISO LeBron settling, whatever. And I'm sure Darvin wanted other things offensively.
LeBron took a three in like the last, I don't know, 30 seconds or something of double overtime. You know, could have ended up potentially the Lakers' last possession or one of the last possessions of that double overtime. That was I'm exhausted, man, yeah. Three. Like, and I'm sure LeBron would, you know, the minute it left his hands, he's like, oh, that wasn't a great idea.
Yeah.
But
that's fatigue. And fatigue takes the ball movement away, it takes the player movement away. And when Russ is the other guy out there, who, by the way, they predicate a lot of their offense for him on isolation. And so that's how a lot of it gets done anyway. It's just, it was a recipe for it not to go well, and it didn't. So, you know, in that sense, I wasn't surprised. I did think it was good that Darvin kind of took the bullet for the defense that allowed Doncic to get off the game-tying three. He said he didn't want to foul under 10 seconds. They don't want to do that because you obviously risk the 4-point play. And with Luka, you really do, because here's a guy who can just sort of rise up and hit from anywhere and is strong enough to get through a foul. You don't do it right, whatever. But he said they should have blitzed. They should have tried to force the ball underneath the 3-point line, and at the very least, made somebody else take that shot, which to me is absolutely true, because despite the fact he hadn't scored in 17 minutes, it's not like the other rest of the team was doing that well. They only had 42 points in the second half as a group. So I agree, make somebody else take that shot. It was good to see Darvin accept some responsibility for that. Yeah, I mean, it's still still a tough shot that Luka hit twice in each of those, to get the overtime, then to get in double overtime.
Mentioned this before and say it again, as efficient as Doncic line looked in terms of the shooting, you know, 14 of 28 from the field, 4 of 9 from behind the arc, I actually thought a lot of this game he was defended really well. Mm-hmm. This was just a game where Luka Doncic was a superstar. Like, he did things that you look for and sometimes even expect your superstars to do. Like, there were not many, I mean, I'm not even sure any shots that Luka made that, like, my immediate reaction was like, dude, like, who's defending him? Like,
certainly not late. I mean, earlier in the game, there was a stretch where, particularly again, and this is where I think the reluctance to blitz him comes. There was a stretch of the game, I remember if it was in the second quarter. I think it was the second quarter, where they tried to really aggressively blitz and get the ball out of Luka's hand. And this, look, the Mavs aren't filled with a lot of great shot creators. When, you know, you get Spencer Dinwiddie, who had a couple nice moments in the overtime, should be noted. You know, Tim Hardaway can sort of put the ball on the floor sometimes, but not really. But what they are good at now is moving around to places where Luka can find them, exploiting double teams that come high on the floor. And they had a stretch of about 3 or 4 minutes. Every time down the floor, they would just bing, 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 bing off of these Lakers double teams. And so I do get the reluctance. In the end, Luka had a little bit more juice. Their superstar had more juice. He was tired, but he had a little more juice left in the tank than LA's did. And that's, to some degree, the difference of the game.
I mean, this also can happen when your superstar, or if you want to count Russ and the superstars, are late in their careers, late, you know, mid to late 30s versus
LeBron's
Luka
38,
Doncic.
Russ is 34, and Doncic is what, 24, 23?
Something like that. I mean, you know, that matters. Your legs matter.
Yeah. Some interesting workout news for the Lakers. A couple names that people might recognize. Heading to El Segundo to try to impress the brass. We'll talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by BetOnline, your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. BetOnline.net. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there, from football to basketball to NHL, tennis, even esports. They got it all at BetOnline.net. And if you love sports podcasts, which of course you do, you listen to Double Overtime worth of them, you can find more of those at BetOnline as well. They got content over at BetOnline. Always the fastest, easiest way to get your betting fix. So head to the website today or use your mobile device. Learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Darvin Ham letting people know the Lakers will be taking tomorrow off. It will be a therapy day. No real surprise there. I want to let people know that today's episode, just a reminder, brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. Lakers will practice on, that would be Saturday, ahead of a tough Sunday game. Sixers in town. Then they get the Rockets, the Kings, the Grizzlies, before you go and face a slumping Blazers team. So some winnable games in here, but you want to steal one against like that Sixers, Kings, Grizzlies section. You beat the Rockets, beat the Blazers, steal one against the Sixers, Kings, and Grizzlies, and you know, you're 3-2 in a stretch. Then you move on to the next one. I mean, I feel like that's almost how the Lakers need to break up these chunks. Boogie Cousins coming to town for a workout.
And Myers Leonard.
Two centers, Myers Leonard being the other. Before we get to the specific guys themselves and talk about, like, would you sign one of those dudes? Do you want to go down the Myers Leonard road? Do you get at all concerned, Andy, that they're working out centers to begin with? Because if you're really confident Anthony Davis is going to be back in a week and a half, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, whatever it might be, would you start signing guys to just sit behind Thomas Bryant just in case? That was my concern when I saw this.
Well, okay. If they are thinking about this purely as a 10-day deal, and like going into this, they're going to get 10-day deals, but sometimes you sign a guy to a 10-day deal knowing you're likely to sign him to another 10-day deal with the idea that you are eventually going to sign them for the rest of the season. You just do, there's a procedure for this. If they are going into this just thinking this is a 10-day deal and likely that's it, we are just concerned that we have no real size behind Thomas Bryant. Damian Jones is just buried in this rotation.
You and I might play center before he does.
He does not play at all. Wenyan works hard, but he's undersized for the role, and we don't want to ask LeBron to do this unless we absolutely have to. If Bryant gets hurt, we are screwed, or if he gets gassed, we're screwed. Let's just have somebody there as an option for 10 days until we hopefully get AD back by then. Okay, fine. I mean, maybe they're not necessarily the two guys I'd target, but whatever. As a strategy, okay. If, however, there is any thought that either one of these guys could be around for longer than a 10-day deal, yeah, I am concerned, because that would start bleeding into this whole ramp-up period / eyeing the calendar thing that we heard a lot of optimism being reported. So, yeah, that would concern me.
Okay. I'm just glad I wasn't being... I mean, look, I think some of this is, you know, sort of post-traumatic stress from just, you know, seasons of watching and waiting and worrying every time Anthony Davis hits the ground. And then the actual results of he's hurt all the time. And knowing how dependent the Lakers season is on this guy staying healthy. So I'm glad that I wasn't the only person who jumped to perhaps paranoid conspiratorial conclusions.
It again, I'm not going all the way there yet, but it did cross my mind.
Yeah. Okay.
They could use a wing more than they could use a center. Big picture.
Yeah.
Again, if it's just 10 days, whatever. Fine. I get it.
You buy for anything for 10 days.
Well, just
I'm not saying this is what I think is what's happening. I'm just saying I thought about it. Why though? Let's start with DeMarcus Cousins. Why DeMarcus Cousins?
He's experienced. He's a known commodity. He also played with the Bucks for, I don't even know if it was a full season.
17 games.
It's one of many places that Boogie has tried and unfortunately been unable to resurrect his career after all these injuries. So there's familiarity there, particularly. It's kind of like the school of thought with Sterling Brown. You know, the idea of if you're going to bring in a guy short term, but possibly get pressed into playing him, it helps if it's somebody that knows what you run and somebody that you have a rapport with. And, you know, with Boogie is physically not the guy that he used to be. He's not the player that he used to be, but, you know, he is a smart, experienced, talented guy that in theory could be put out there.
Yeah, I think the Lakers too, given, you know,
They know him. He's been with them.
And I feel like there is sort of a, I don't want to say a sense of obligation, but I think a certain willingness to give him a tryout. I mean, he was a, you know, a good member of the team.
He was we were around that team a lot before the pandemic. They raved about him. They really liked him in that locker room. And I know he's had his issues on the court. He's had recent one off the court, pretty ugly, but he was very well liked within that group.
Right. And never had a chance to like really make it, even try to make it work in LA and try to be a Laker. So I do think there's a little bit of that there too. I guess, you know, before we wrap here, without going too deep into the Myers-Leonard rabbit hole, do you think it's worth being the team that brings him back to the league?
That is a fascinating question. And that was something also that I noted on Twitter, that if nothing else, Myers-Leonard and the Lakers could be interesting just when it comes to that periodic question of whether talent merits riding out a backlash. Mm-hmm. Because even before the Twitch incident, which I'm sure people are familiar with, Myers-Leonard was playing some video game on a Twitch live stream, used an anti-Semitic slur. It basically ended his career along with some injuries that he was recovering from, and nobody ever brought him back.
Then went and got more surgeries and all kinds of stuff.
Right. But as I noted, he was trending downward with the actual basketball, which makes him a tougher sell than some other guys. Like, for example, you know, Kyrie Irving, with everything that's gone, comes with Kyrie, and I've been on record many times, I would not give Kyrie Irving a long-term deal. Ever. I don't think he is reliable enough on a variety of fronts. But Kyrie is at least talented that you can talk yourself into the headache being worth it, either in your locker room.
He's an elite player.
Yes. Yes. You can. I would not talk myself into it, but I can see how others could be talked into it. Myers-Leonard is not at a talent level unless the last couple of years of rehabbing have been really good to him, he's not at a talent level where a backlash that I think would happen on some level could feel worth riding out, especially for a guy that may only be there 10 days.
Yeah. And it's funny. It's like, I mean, for what it's worth, both of us are Jewish. I
sure
don't.
Would be weird if one of us was and the other wasn't.
People convert.
Sure, that's true. It's
true.
True. Fair.
What religion was the train conductor?
Jewish.
I just made that up. I am irrationally pleased with that joke. Anyway, so I don't think what he did is necessarily the kind of thing that should keep a guy out of the NBA for the rest of his life. People make mistakes. I have not been following him closely.
I actually did do a little bit of digging about this just because I thought we'd talk about it. And it seems like he has done a lot of the reparations work. And, you know, he's worked with the Jewish community, I believe, in Miami and in New York. I mean, it seems like he's put forth the effort. You know, you
then I have no problem with somebody giving him a contract. I don't know if it needs to be, like, given everything else that they're juggling right now and all the other stuff. I don't know if it needs to be the Lakers, but I mean, I'd be really interested to see what happens if they come in and he works out. Presumably, a lot of times guys will even talk to the media after they work out what he says, how he stands or answers the questions. And I am more like rolling my eyes at it, I got to say, from a basketball standpoint, than I am like a cultural, religious kind of reasoning. Like
what he did was obviously bad.
Of course it was.
Right.
But there are certain things that I think, you don't get a second chance for that, or you can get a chance to do other things, but you don't necessarily get to return to whatever position you had in your life. I don't think that what he did on a Twitch live stream is worthy of being excommunicated from the NBA, you know, particularly as like a bench guy anyway. I just feel like there's probably, I would rather have a center who has been playing in the league somewhere, who has been in the G League somewhere, who has been in Europe somewhere playing competitive basketball, so that when you pull the ripcord on your emergency 10-day center and you need him to play, it's not the first time he's set foot on a court, an NBA court, in 2 years. So that would be my big problem with going down the Myers-Leonard path.
Real quick, just because this popped into my head, and I preface this by saying there's no sourcing on this whatsoever. This is just something that popped into my head and saw a few other people on Twitter mention this at all. Do you think there's any chance that the interest and, I guess, potential signing of Meyer could be a bit of a trial balloon to see the reaction if they eventually go down the Kyrie road?
No. As soon as you started talking about that, I was like, no, that is way too much, like, I don't know, like what magna four, brain.
You know, four-dimensional,
like,
chess.
Four-dimensional chess. Like,
okay.
I don't think they're thinking that far ahead.
Okay.
Because it's very different situations anyway. But I could be wrong.
It's you're correct that they're different, but
good God, I really hope it's not like they're spending this is what they're spending their time on.
Well,
guys, let's
free agency's coming up this offseason, Brian.
I mean, let's not
they like stars, Brian.
Hold off on any trades that might, you know, make us better right now. Let's play the long game here and use Myers Leonard as a super obscure way to do a backlash trial balloon for the Kyrie Irving.
You know what it is? Like that. It's like when they froze Han Solo in the carbonite before doing it on Luke.
Well, that at least they wanted to see if it worked.
That's what I. But that's the same thing. Like Han Solo,
they were literally testing out technology. I mean, they weren't like,
or it's a.
They weren't checking to see if like the members of the Senate would be displeased.
No, one way or another, they were just seeing, does this work? One way or the other, we're going to try it on somebody else, because they considered Han Solo, if he died, to be
expendable, you know, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Guarantee we're the only people who brought this level of analysis to the Myers Leonard potential signing.
Yep.
On a Lakers podcast. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the show. We will be back on Sunday post Sixers. Everybody have a great weekend.